When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
All right, and welcome to another episode of Unchained with Patrick Royce. And Patrick, it's gotten so bad that I spent Saturday and Sunday raking the yard.
Yes, you did.
And I've got blisters to prove it, Pat.
And a very nice fella who brought you over a six-pack of Red Stripe, pounded on the door, and all he could hear or get a response from was the dog, who was very upset that this guy was outside the door. But I never suspected you were doing yard work. So I figured you might have been on a long walk with the bride or something, because it was such a gorgeous day. Man, it was a beautiful weekend. Would have been a great weekend for ball. And I saw Phil Miller pointed out that the Giants would be, if we were playing, would be in Target Field for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize that they were the only team that hadn't been here.
The team that almost came here in what, 58?
58, yeah. They were
St. Louis Park, right?
Yeah, they were going to build their own ballpark out by, of course, Mets. That had happened earlier, because Mets Stadium, that was being talked about in the early 50s. They owned that land. They bought that land with the idea. The original idea was to build a new ballpark for the minor league team, but make it expandable.
Yep.
So, but then it was hot and heavy once we built Met Stadium that the Giants might come here. But then Walter O'Malley had a better idea. Horace, you take San Francisco, which is a nice little town that has some interest in baseball, and I'll take Los Angeles and have the greatest gold mine in the history of sports. So once again, Horace got outshuffled by Walter O'Malley, but worked out for everybody. And we had to wait only, 3 years?
After not that, that long, yeah.
61. Do you realize that when the Milwaukee Braves mm-hmm. came to Milwaukee in 1953, that put the total number of towns with Major League Baseball at 11.
Wow.
You had three in New York.
Yep.
Two in St. Louis. Two in Chicago.
Yep.
Two in Philadelphia and two in Boston.
So what do you think the thinking was having two teams in Philadelphia and St. Louis?
Well, when they first started, it was travel, basically. The Pacific Coast League, there was a Pacific Coast League, and they were like their own major league. They didn't care. I think if you go back and look, there's some seasons when they played 190 games.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Because of the weather. They just played all year, and it was up and down the West Coast, mm-hmm. and it was like this foreign land. And then in the American Association, of course, which we were in all those years, was the Midwest League, but we were never considered to be outposts that could support Major League Baseball. That all changed when they went to Milwaukee and drew 2 million people, and they said, this is pretty good. So, and by the time the Twins, in a decade, they went from 11 cities. I think we were the 17th.
Okay.
I think we were the 17th. See, because, you know, as soon as the A's rapidly moved to Kansas City, St. Louis moved east. You know, the St. Louis Browns moved to Baltimore, and I think that was 54. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they moved the same year as the Braves, but I don't think so. I think they moved in 54.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually were going to, Everybody, Bill Veeck owned that team, and he was going to move it to where the heck was it? And they didn't give him approval. They basically made him sell to Baltimore, and rather than move to wherever he was going to move, maybe it was Baltimore. Maybe he wanted to move the team to Baltimore, and then they basically didn't give him permission because they wanted to get rid of him. They didn't like those wacky promotions. Dang it!
And he owned how many teams then, Pat? The White Sox twice, the Browns.
He owned the White Sox twice and the Indians, and of course, he had to sell the Indians. 1948, they became the first ever team to draw 2 million people, Cleveland. And it was, they had great teams, but he had to sell because of a divorce. His first wife was divorcing him.
I believe that.
Wanted half. And so basically that's why he had to sell the Indians and then ended up with the Browns, which was a bad trade for a fellow. No doubt about that. Cause I don't think, I'm not smart enough to know, but I don't think there was ever a period where the Browns weren't the poor cousins. The difference between the Cardinals and the Browns was always greater than, for instance, the Red Sox and the Braves or the A's and the Phillies. In fact, the A's, I think the A's were the kings of Philadelphia for a long time, of course, and then somebody had to go eventually there. But yeah, you go back and look at it, it's astounding. I mean, when Milwaukee got baseball, our arch rivals, Wisconsin.
Yep.
When Milwaukee got baseball, we were excited. We were happy. We went down there, mom and dad and the three kids would get in the station wagon and go down there and pony it up and stay in a hotel for $8 and buy tickets for $2.50 and be really excited.
Did you go?
I once got on a bus as about a 10-year-old kid in Fairmont. And went the Fairmont radio station did Braves games.
Yep.
And they were sending a bus, and my old man got me a seat on the bus, and I bussed over to County Stadium. I was the only by myself. I was the only, there were some
10?
Other
kids. That's great.
At about 10, yeah. Went over with the delegation from Fairmont. It probably was about, I might not have been 10 because it was 54 or 5, and I was. My birthday was in October, so I might have been 9. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to see the Braves because in the afternoon they played a lot of afternoon games because of groups coming in that wanted to then get on the they'd get on the bus at 6 in the morning, then and they wanted to come back. They didn't want to. They had just busloads of people coming from all over the Midwest, so they played a lot of afternoon games. And we used to be able to get the Fairmont station in Fulda on in the afternoon, but not at night. In fact, they might have been assigned. They might have signed off. I don't know. They might have been one of those
daytimer.
It might have been a daytimer. But we were big in the Braves. They had two great announcers too, Earl Gillespie and Blaine Walsh. Back in the days when you just had professional announcers, but they were rather famous, and that changed. That changed the whole concept of baseball when people flocked to County Stadium. Of course, their first year there, they were just a little over 500, but they had Matthews and Aaron and Spahn, and then they got Burdett, and I mean, they were great. They never had a losing. They were in Milwaukee 13 years and never had a losing season.
Who owned them? Do you remember?
Yeah, Lou Perini. And he moved them out of Boston. And then Milwaukee, the attendance, they spoiled them with attendance. And the attendance started to slip. But basically, TV was starting to have an impact. And he moved, and TV and radio rights, and he moved to Atlanta and, became the team of the South. Because before that, the team of the South was the St. Louis Cardinals. All across...
Yeah. Yeah.
All across the South, all those radio stations from Louisiana to North Carolina had the KMOX network, Cardinals network, was enormous. I mean, just, throughout the South, it was Cardinals.
Cardinals were your team too, right?
Yeah, well, because of KMYX, I could listen to them at home. You know, you could listen to them. They had the big booming 50,000-watt signal. And in Fulda, that came in as easily as WCCO's 830, the, you know, KMYX 1120, maybe.
1120, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
It was, I mean, it was like, you know, it was, they were broadcasting from Worthington. You know, it was great. It was a clear signal, and it was, you know, I listened to him every night.
So that was that was Jack Buck, Harry Carey, and Garagiola?
Jack Buck was the third stringer. Harry and Garagiola were the normal team, but if one of them was missing or they thought they'd work
if Harry
too
was
hard,
on a bender?
Yeah, Jack Buck was the backup, yeah. And then Harry got fired because of, I believe it was... Gussie Bush's daughter-in-law that Harry had a little bit of a fling with and cost him his job.
That's around the time that Harry got hit by the car in the freeway,
hit
right?
Hit by a car, yeah. He was that woman, I believe, that he was visiting in his retelling was Earl Weaver's ex-wife, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
But that's what he told me. I got a column in my archives that's fantastic from my St. Paul days on Harry that he got. It's raining, and he used to, I think it was the Chase Hotel, and he had a key to get in the back door, so he'd meet his young ladies at the, you know, that he'd hustle up. And he'd just come in the back door and go up. But he parked across the street, and it was that it's down there by the river in St. Louis, you know, that big wide highway.
Yep.
But it wasn't as wide then, but it was four lanes, and it was a rainy night, and he was scampering across there. He moved fast when there was a lady waiting, and he got hit by a cab, and the guy, you know, and he always said, the cab driver looked up and said, "It could be. It might be. It is Harry Carey." And I mean, he broke both legs.
Yeah.
And he got the hell beat out of him. And the other part of the story, I don't know if this is true or not, is so he's along. I think this is like right at the end of the season, whatever year it was. And so he's got this long recuperation and he's spring training. He's, you know, getting wheeled up to the booth to do his games and stuff. And then they're going to – and then he walks – opening day, they have him – I think they're having him – I don't know. They're honoring him because he damn near died and bled to death. And he gets out there – and with his crutches, and then he throws the first one away, and he throws the second one away, and he starts walking around, and the crowd goes nuts. And Harry was back. I'm sure you doubt that Harry would show some showmanship on that.
Yeah, I'm shocked by that story.
Oh yeah, he was a beauty.
I'd love to know how the year went that Harry worked for Charlie Finley in Oakland. That's got to be the greatest.
Man. Yeah, well, I'm sure they got along great, don't you think?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think he didn't like freezing to death and, you know, in Oakland and where with a second team in town, you know, although they were good. I mean, were they good when he went? No, was, not yet, I don't think.
Right around the time they started to get good, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And then but he had a chance to go to Chicago, and he wasn't going to pass that up. I've told this before, but I'll never forget when the White Sox fire him and the Cubs hire him about 3 days later, and I get him at the pump room. I call the pump room to is Harry in there having lunch? And they said yes. And I said, "Tell him Patrick Ricey wants to talk to him from Minneapolis." I mean, he just knew I was Pat from Minneapolis. I'm sure he didn't know my. So they take the phone to the, back in the days of, you see in the old Hollywood movies, they take the phone to the phone booth, to the booth that he's in, and they plug it in.
Plug it in, yeah.
Plug it in, and I interviewed him there, and that's what he gave me the quote. "Joe McConnell couldn't sell a Budweiser to a man crawling across the Sahara on his belly," or something like that. He couldn't sell a Budweiser to a guy dying of thirst in the Sahara, he said, something like that. So anyway, it all worked out for Harry.
Announcer trash talk. We need more of it.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah.
Harry was the greatest.
Oh, he was. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the Cubs won a little bit when he was there, but he covered up a lot of their sins. Oh. There's no doubt about it.
Partially because he'd rip them and it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was none of this homer. I mean, he was, but he'd kill them, too, if they didn't play well. Which
Yeah, he was. He didn't care. I mean, him and Pearsall is the greatest announcing team in the history of sports because they were both nuts. You know, when Harry's the sane member of the booth, that's quite a.
What was your line to Harry in the Met Stadium press box?
When
with Pearsall,
Stu Thornley was crawling up the left field foul pole, and I went over there and opened up the booth and said, "Harry, get Pearsall back in the booth." And about 2 minutes later, Pearsall comes charging into the press box. He's going to beat the crap out of me. He didn't like jokes about him being insane, even though he was insane.
That game still, June probably, of 77?
Yeah,
my greatest regret in life is that I wasn't old enough to go to that game.
Yeah. Well, 1912, right? Wasn't it 1912? Was that the score?
Yeah, I think that's
19
right.
19-12.
Glenn Adams had eight RBI, and nobody
RBIs,
cared.
Nobody cared. Yeah, it was the greatest. Well, I think it might be. It's one of the biggest regular season crowds in Met Stadium history, too. For some reason, everybody showed up that day. It was a gorgeous day.
It was Jersey Day, right? Crew jerseys. I think they were giving away.
Yeah, probably something like that. It was rocking and rolling. I'll tell you that. And a lot of bare-chested lads and halter-top gals wandering around there who knew that when Rod Carew came up, they were supposed to give a standing O, and beyond that, they were there for the beer.
That was the Kicks fan base, basically, Pat.
Oh, it was. It
that was
the
Kicks fan base.
There's no doubt about it.
Let's
see here.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, that was Kicks primetime. You got to remember that. And this, you know, for the Twins to once again capture the fancy of the Twin Cities youth was pretty amazing in 77, but that team was hard not to love.
June 26th of 77, and you're exactly right, 19-12, the Twins beat the White Sox.
Wow. God, probably about 3:20, huh?
No, yeah, 3:13, which back in 77.
How long did 15-14 take us last year? 5 hours, right?
Something like that, yeah.
At Target Field, 5:03. It was after midnight.
They announced 46,463 for attendance at the Met that day.
Oh, yeah. It was, a lot of them didn't make it in until about the third inning, you know. It was one of those 15,000 walk-ups, you know, type of thing.
Carew, 4-for-5, scored 5 runs, drove in 6, and walked 1, so 6 at-bats.
What was he hitting at the end, does it say?
Let me see here. Yes, 403 at the end of that
403,
day.
403, because he got up to 406. He must have made it out there at the end. I remember him getting up to 406, yeah. And, Addy knocks in 8, and nobody paid any attention. He was a great guy, too.
He
was the Dodgers pitching coach for a while now, you know. He was that. His nickname was Hitting Bitch. Those were the two things he could do best. Everybody called him Hitting Bitch.
Oh, that's great.
I don't even know if we, I don't think I ever used that in print, but back then I could have. I don't know.
I was going to say, in St. Paul, you could have definitely gotten one through.
Yeah, could have been a lead. Wouldn't have been a problem at all.
Yeah, but the poor guy drives in 8 runs. Nobody gives a damn.
No, yeah, that was fantastic. So I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
As we have virus paranoia here, is anybody concerned that every street in the Twin Cities is being repaired by construction guys who are out there standing next to each other, sweating and breathing hard, and you can't go anywhere in Minneapolis without running into streets being repaired everywhere. We're not worried about filling potholes is essential work then, right?
You know what? God bless them. This is the time to do it. I'm perfectly happy if they're going to do it now. Let them do it now. I'd much prefer that to them coming back out when we're all trying to drive around, hopefully in a month.
Yes, well, it's been great for traffic. There's no doubt the pandemic has been great for traffic.
Downtown, you could.
I do find it hilarious. Yeah. I saw a bunch of them today kind of standing there thinking, you know, can we get another hour out of fixing this hole, or do we have to go find a new one, you know? And there's about four of them sitting there looking at whatever patchwork they're doing, and I just find it humorous that we won't let two kids play horse in a Minneapolis park, but on the street next to them, we can have 14 guys in a 30-foot area.
Fix them all now, baby. Get them all fixed now.
Yes.
Get out of my way after that. No, I'm for it.
Shula, do you never got to deal with Shula, huh?
No. In fact, he retired when I was probably a teenager.
Yeah, that's right. He was, he did, he didn't coach beyond, early 60s, maybe? Age-wise?
Yeah.
He's probably been done for 25 years.
Hey, Pat, did Jimmy Johnson replace him in Miami after Jimmy left the Cowboys?
I don't.
Is that right?
Maybe he did. I saw your tweet.
I
started out. I mean, it was Dave Craig. Dave Craig was one of the most amazing stories in football history. The Craig went to Milton College, which no longer exists, a town of 5,000 over in eastern Wisconsin. And he got signed as an undrafted free agent in 1980, and the school folded 2 years later. It went out of business. But I read something about his bio that when he showed up as a freshman at Milton, he was their seventh team quarterback when he started.
Really?
And the first six apparently had some flaws, because by like the fourth game he was playing, and he threw some touchdowns, but he had a hell of a career. He ended up playing over a decade and as a guy out of this college. But that team went to Denver. I looked him up. It was the Seahawks' eighth season, their first playoff team. Chuck Knox was coaching them. And they beat Denver 31-7. That was Elway's rookie year, and he and Steve DeBerg were kind of alternating as quarterback, and Elway actually came in into that, didn't start that game. Steve DeBerg started that game, but Seattle had a great defense, and they kicked the crap out of them. And then they went down to Miami, and Miami was like a number one seed or number two seed. They had the same record as Pittsburgh. I looked it up, 12-4.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the same record as Oakland. They had the same record as the L.A. Raiders. They had the same record as the L.A. Raiders, 12-4. But they got to play the wild card, and even though they were the two seed, and L.A. Raiders played Pittsburgh, the three seed, even though they were the one seed, which I don't understand how that worked. But anyway, yeah, Seattle went down there and beat him, and boy, that was a kick in the ass. And Shula was a little. What I remember is going to his post game press conference, and he was an angry man. Man, you could not. It was like trying to ask Belichick a good question. There was no chance. He was
no answer, huh?
He thought he was going to the Super Bowl with Marina and that team, and then Seattle got whipped pretty good by the L.A. Raiders, who then went and won the Super Bowl against 83. Who'd they beat?
Have to look.
Who'd they beat? Man, where's Manny?
I'm not Manny. I was just going to volunteer.
Declan.
It's a podcast. He's not listening. We can't find him.
Come on, Declan.
So 83?
83, yeah, with 84 game. Did they beat the Redskins? They beat the Redskins.
I think
they
that's
beat
right.
The Redskins.
I think that's
the
right. But
they beat Theismann in Tampa, right?
I can confirm in 1 second here. That sounds right.
Because in 80, at Oakland Raiders, they beat the Eagles in the Superdome.
Yeah, that's right.
In 83, they beat. Yeah, but everybody thought, I think Washington was favored in that game. I remember Theismann throwing an interception early in that game. My favorite Super Bowls I ever covered were the ones that had the Raiders in them, because them boys could fill up a notebook. They were all lunatics. It was great.
And they loved that stuff, right?
Oh, God, they did. There was no attempt by the Raiders, Davis's PR guys or anybody, to shield anybody from anything.
They weren't standing there trying to block you from getting a good quote?
They could say anything they wanted to. It was brilliant. Lester Hayes, who stuttered like crazy, you know?
Yep.
But you'd had to wait for him. He'd get very upset if you tried to help him out. But he was hysterical when he finally got to his point. And they were all like nuts, you know. It was
he's the one that hit Sammy White, right, and knocked his helmet off.
Was that Hayes? Probably.
I think it was Lester Hayes.
Hayes was. He's got to be in the Hall of Fame, doesn't he? He was fantastic.
He'd be thrown out of the league now, Pat.
Oh yeah. They had a bunch of them. I mean, they would. Jack Tatum was the worst. You know, Jack Tatum's the guy that. Who's the one that had him cut his finger off so he could keep playing? Was that
Ronnie Lott for San Francisco.
Ronnie Lott from San Francisco. I don't think that's happening anymore. You know, if we came into the locker room and noticed somebody was missing a finger, and the Vikings said, "Well, he's such a warrior, we cut it off." I don't think it would be I don't think he would be honored like he is.
No,
today, like they were.
No, we would not see that as a great step. And it was Tatum who hit White in the Super Bowl and knocked his
Tatum
off.
So crazy. Yeah, Hayes was physical, but not that good. Yeah, Larani. Yeah. I mean, they were all nuts back then. The cheap shots are amazing. Hey, I wanted to one thing. I wrote down a note. LaBelle had we did this little thing last week in the Strib. Readers wanted stories, you know, anything to fill space, I guess.
Yep.
And LaBelle did a piece about the Eric Fox home run.
Yes.
And it reminded me again. I covered the World Series that year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not the World Series, All Star Game that year in San Diego, and. It was played on July 14th, and this was when you could go down on the field and watch BP, you know?
Yep.
This is pregame BP, not the day before BP. It's pregame BP, and I'm down there, and Fregosi's managing the Phillies and coaching the National League, and he waves me over, and he said, "Everyone I talk to says that club of yours is playing better, that this is a better team than they won the World Series with last year. They're playing better.
Mm-hmm.
And they never give away a run. Their fielding is the best anybody's ever seen. Smiley's great, replacing Morris. The pitching's good. That club, and I looked it up, they were... You know, they didn't start great, but they were 18, and they'd won 18 out of 22 going into that that All-Star game. And they were in a battle that year with Oakland, of course. And this was the 14th of July, and the Olympics in Barcelona started the 23rd or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe the 25th. So I left like a week later for Barcelona for the Olympics. And this is the pre-internet days, and that was like my, and it was the only way you found out how the Twins came out. Basically, was I guess maybe you could look at the wire. I don't know, but you know, I was working these long days and not able to follow it. So it took me about 3 days to find out they got swept by Oakland and were going in the tank, and this guy nobody'd ever heard of hit a home run. But
I was there.
I came back.
Yep.
Like a month after that All-Star game, and it was like a train wreck. And I've talked to Kelly about it, and he says that, you know, all those losing years he had, that was the biggest disappointment of his managerial career, to the point he contemplated quitting because he thought that he didn't get out of that team what he should have gotten out of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that.
He
was
depressed.
I mean, that was a really good team that completely collapsed.
Yeah. Yeah. I've talked to him about, you know, not, I never wrote a piece. It was just BSing, but he's, you know, I said, what the hell happened? I said, I was in the Olympics. I came back. And he said, he gets depressed in a hurry about that one. Cause, you know, he didn't mind losing when he had no chance, but when he thought that, he felt like they could go back to back and, just, I'd have, you know, just they hit the wall. I don't know what happened to him.
I remember in June of that year, 92, Pat, thinking that that was easily the best Twins team I had seen in my lifetime up to that point. And, yeah, that Eric Fox game after that, it was like they let the air out of them completely. And, of course, they basically, the rest of the 90s, never rebounded, really.
They still won, what, 88? Or
yeah, they were good. They were really good.
They still won, but they were, you know, they were a team that, look like at the All-Star break, they're going to win high 90s because they were rolling.
Mm-hmm.
They were just, you know, they were just, and you go back, I think they were 7-11 or something. And then at the All-Star break, they were 65-39 or some damn thing, 26 over or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a good team, man. That was kind of a, you know what they remind me of? The of course, that the 70 team, finished and they won the division and they won the division easy. Mm-hmm. But when you look back at, like, if you go back in Twins history, everybody remembers the Billy Martin team, right? 69.
Yep.
Got fired, blah, blah, blah. Well, the next year's team won one more game. You look up that team. They ended up getting swept by the Orioles just like the 69 team did. You look up that 70 team. Wow. Jim Perry won the Cy Young. I mean, it was a hell of a team, that one, too, that didn't get to the finish line, you know.
All right, sir. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Do you believe that we're going to be playing baseball on July 1st, as veteran reporter Trevor Plouffe has reported? I was telling Declan that there's a story today on a farm. Was it a guy who used to play for a young guy? A Latin kid who played for Oakland, was it? I think, I don't know. I saw Bob Gale's tweet on it. He died from the virus. Kid that.
Yeah, I saw it a couple of days ago.
And he's in what, his 20s?
Yep.
Yeah, that might delay things a little
bit. Yeah, I don't think we're playing July 1st. I think it's a nice thought, and
we certainly need
nice thoughts right now, but I think the odds of us playing on July 1st are probably very small.
But. You know, that's probably they've gone through so many concepts now that, I don't know if, you know, if you want to read the pessimistic stuff, what is the, if it's going to be worse in the fall, what's the object of anybody trying to do anything, you know?
Yep. It's unfortunate, but you're right. All right.
All right. Well, pray for our construction workers, because nobody cares that there's 5,000
Fix those
of them
roads,
working
man.
In Minneapolis.
Fix just, those roads.
Just don't go play horse.
Yeah,
you know, don't be a 18-year-old kid playing horse. Jacob Fry doesn't want you to do that. All right.
Talk to you.
Goodbye.